Again, just lovely to be here with you all. I wanted to talk today, explore together the kind of the rough heading would sort of be sort of how do we make decisions? Carlita and I were speaking about this a little bit earlier before the class, and it's come up for me for this week. There's been a big family process around just these big decisions, and just not to be transparent, it's about my daughter's school, and really sitting with the course of this week of how do we know how to make decisions. There's a Marianne Williamson quote that I couldn't find that is something along the lines of each of us, and I believe this fully, is we all have this inner committee of voices telling us what we should do or shouldn't do, or you know, the different in another analogy would be sort of the different octaves on the piano. This is the choruses, the orchestra within our minds, and some instruments are louder than others. And her quote was sort of pointing to, how do we know which is the truest? You know, and I find that this practice of awareness and sitting and getting clear, the quote of, can we allow from the Lao Tzu, do you have the patience to wait until your mud settles and the water is clear? And the right action arises by itself. And those key comment, element of that is patience, and that willingness to sit with the discomfort of the mud that is swirling around. And again, coming back to that, the Marianne Williamson quote of like, how do we attune ourselves to be able to listen and know the felt sense of what is true? How do we know what the wise or the right action that can arise by itself? How do we cultivate our ability to trust that's what's true? And I don't know about you all, but when I was a kid, this was not something that was talked about or named or cultivated at all. It was kind of quite the opposite. Like, no, the experience you're having isn't true. And that was sort of the world that I grew up in that was confusing. And then when I was putting together the pieces of, oh, wait, I think what I was experiencing was actually true. It took a lot of work to kind of take down the edifice that was created around don't believe yourself. And that takes some doing. And I think many of us have some version of that, how, because culturally we're not taught that. And certainly as women, the concept and the truth of women's intuition is not, through the ages, been something that's been looked to as a guiding force of wisdom, as we can see throughout time in history. So how do we individually claim that birthright of our own wisdom? And how do we sift through the mud, the expectations, the shoulds, the feedback we get to be able to discern for ourselves, oh, this is what's true? And it's a real challenge, right? Particularly when it can go against a set of expectations that either we have of ourselves or others, or the input we get from the conditioning of when we were young, or our family, or our peer group, or just culturally. There's certain ways that we should be doing things, and when we step out of that, there can be a lot of pushback. And again, how do we learn to trust what's true? So I read this a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to read it again because it's always nice to bring in Ajahn Chah's voice. Ajahn Chah is sort of the grandfather, lineage holder for Spirok, one of them. And there's this quote on the stillness. And when the mind reaches a level of stillness, it's not enough, the stillness of tranquility. You have to make it still through insight. With the stillness of tranquility, it's not like being able to be still in a hot place. You have to go to the seaside to be still. And when you go back to where it's hot, you're not still anymore. The preoccupations of tranquility are only on this level of stillness. But with the preoccupations of insight, then when it's hot in the mountains, you can stay there comfortably. When you go down to the seaside, you can stay there comfortably. You can focus on knowing these things, and the mind does not run. It knows pleasure, it knows pain. That's how we know when we practice. And I keep coming back to this notion of the stillness of tranquility, and as I understand it, sort of the stillness of comfort. For those of you who sat retreats at Spirit Rock, it's like sort of the joke of like it's the upper middle path. It's the food is really good, and the accommodations are really comfortable and everyone's really nice and it's gorgeous. And it's, even though retreats can be hard, it's like, oh, this is great. Let me come home and everything's a big mess. Like, okay, what happened to that tranquility? Gone. When the stillness is conditioned on outward circumstances, it can feel good. Like, temperature's good, I'm comfortable, I don't feel sick, excellent. And then the temperature changes, or I feel sick, or something's wrong, and then we're all thrown off. And those moments when it all is congruent, external and internal, are great, but really not a place to rest because everything changes. So how do we, as I understand again this quote, the stillness of insight is, oh, it's just like this. It's hot out, or here in California, not today, but it's been so smoky. And we were joking this morning, it was cloudy this morning, and now I'm like, are these clouds or is it smoke? And sort of not even being able to tell anymore. But looking outside of ourselves to be like, okay, it's kind of uncomfortable, or I'm hot, or I'm cold. It doesn't need to be a problem. It is how it is. Okay, can I find and cultivate that place of rest? You know, the poem I quote a lot from Martha Postlethwaite, the clearing. Can I create a clearing in the dense busyness of my mind? And I love to play with that phrase. Like, can I create a clearing in the dense busyness of my expectations of how I think things should go? Like, it's all just made up in my mind. Either I've been conditioned that way or what the mind is wanting. It's just thoughts. So how can I cultivate the ability to clear that through, to be able to see, oh, this is a lot of expectations running, or disappointments, or stories. Can I create a clearing such that there a wisdom can arise, a sense of settledness, of true stillness? We can rest there because we have freed ourselves from needing the externalities of our lives to go our way. They usually don't, right? You know, and being able to trust, like, it's not because we're doing anything wrong. It's just, okay, this is this life, at this time, how it's unfolding. And this precious opportunity to be able to settle with a sense of awareness of, okay, how do I find true stillness such that I can then glean a sense of wisdom and understanding and teachings? I'm debating sharing more information about my life than you might want to know, but I've been working with this Sagoro, his name is John Lockley, South African teacher, about for myself wanting to really cultivate more capacity about dreaming. I used to dream and then various things happened and I stopped dreaming, and wanting to understand what that's about, and this being able to lean into a capacity to glean wisdom from the dreams. I used to have it, I lost it, and now kind of recultivating it. For me, this way of how can we access wisdom from something other than the thinking mind, which can be so easily hijacked by expectations, fears, desires, concerns, all of the other hindrances, you know, aversion and pushing away and doubt. Ooh, that's a big one. You know, understanding from where we can make decisions and what are reliable sources of information, right? So those of you who know me know one of my sources of great inspiration and wisdom is poetry, Mary Oliver being top on the list. And this poem, I bet many of you know by heart, but I love it, and I'm going to read it in full. Wild geese, you do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk through the desert 100 miles repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. But how do we know? Right? For many of us who have been through various traumas, that the understanding and trusting what the body loves is not easy or necessarily clear. So how do we create and move away, create a clearing such that that channel of understanding is opened? And one of the ways, and certainly not the only way, to cultivate that is by being able to sit through the fire of all the conditioning and pain and upset and discombobulation of the mind, and being able to have the patience to sit. And as the mythology of the Buddha goes, he just sat under the Bodhi tree and allowed his awakening to happen. And it sounds like he went through hell with the visitations of Mara and all the temptations and all that he went through. But can we allow ourselves to just sit, to take our time? Again, culturally not expected. It's like, hurry up, make a decision. People are waiting. And the act of courage to step out and say, wait, what's actually happening, right? Again, from Mary Oliver. And it's funny, I always thought this was a David Wyatt poem, because I've heard his voice read this poem so much. Again, very well known, so forgive me, it's The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop, you knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundation. Through their melancholy, though the melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough and wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. So I don't know if this is true, but my fantasy is this poem from David White is a response to Mary Oliver's, or certainly a connection to, because it is also called The Journey. Above the mountains, the geese turn into light again, painting their black silhouettes on an open sky. Sometimes everything has to be inscribed across the heavens so you can find the one line already written inside you. Sometimes it takes a great sky to find that first bright and indescribable wedge of freedom in your own heart. Sometimes, with the bones of the black sticks left when the fire has gone out, someone has written something new in the ashes of your life. You are not leaving. You are arriving. From Vaclav Havel, hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism. It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that makes something make sense, regardless of how it turns out. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Just again noticing how the body is sitting here, how the poems resonate or not. And so first, to start here with a question of how do you make decisions? The big decisions, not so much what we're going to make for dinner, but the life decisions, those when we come to the crossroads. Do I do this or do I do that? Take this job, leave this job, marry this person, divorce this person. Go to the school, don't do the school. Rent this house, move here. Those decisions. If it's helpful to call to mind the last time you made one of these big life transitory choices, how was it? Sometimes it can feel like this oppressive weight. Oh my God, I don't know. I don't know. And yet, somehow, we do. And if you're working with a recent or not even so recent example of when you made a big life choice, how did you know? What was it? What voice? were you able to follow that said this? This is what's true. Which is not the same thing as it was the quote right decision. We make the best decision we have at the time with the information that is available to us. And sometimes we then change our minds, right? We make the best decision we can with the information that is available to us, and these teachings of awareness and stillness give us a better shot of collecting information that will actually serve us. It does not mean that we will not change our mind or rethink or reevaluate, right? That's being alive and dynamic. But then coming back to can you feel into what does it feel like within the body when you know, oh yeah, this is true. This is what's right. I'm putting that in quotes. I would imagine, and I say this as I know to be true for myself, but for most of us, the body kind of needs to be involved. The mind can spin us any which direction. We can find any resource that would argue one way or the other about what's true, pretty much. But how do we find the congruence between the mind and the heart and the body such that we can step into that clearing to make the wise, to make the right choice? To take that step from a place of wise action, because we've allowed ourselves to move from a place of stillness with an openness to wisdom, to know what the soft animal of the body actually does love. And then to turn that into a reflection question just now, what does this soft animal of your body sitting here on this Thursday evening, afternoon, morning, love? Notice what comes up when you allow the answers to kind of bubble up. What does this soft animal body of ours love? When that soft animal body is accompanied by the stillness of a wise mind and heart and body, what actions, what movements, what path does that soft animal body wish to walk upon to leave in the middle of the night, though the cries are terrible, mend my life? And yet we know we can move with the clarity to be able to save the only life that is ours to save. How do we know? So I think I'll actually stop there. And thank you for coming with me. There's lots of time for us to hear from each other. And I would love if people are willing to share the sense of how do we make decisions? What allows us to really know when it's right? Whether it's that sense in the gut or the heart, or I'm sure we've all had the experience of that one little voice that's like, don't do that. And then we do, like, ah, I knew that. Or the voice that says, do this, and we actually listen, and we're like, yes, we did it, we listened. And on that profound courage it takes to actually listen to that voice, you know, the cries are terrible, mend my life, and yet we can step out